You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we were just talking about this Elvis guy.
Yeah. And
did his last show of the 1950s before he got shipped out and served in the Army.
G.I. Elvis.
You are correct. 7:08 in the morning. Happy Veterans Day to you all. Big show tomorrow. I got Rivera, Deb Ferns, Humane Society, and Ed is emceeing the Knights of Columbus car show.
Listen,
Look at you.
I'm getting up in life now. This is a big deal.
What are the 4 degrees of the Knights of Columbus?
I have no idea. You'll tell me tomorrow.
I will tell you tomorrow.
Okay.
We're going to put you through a whole fraternal ringer tomorrow, so be ready. There'll be blindfolds and paddles.
I want the hat with the feather on the top. I like that. I want one of those. That's all I
Hey, this hour of great radio, depending on your perspective, is brought to you by Central Arizona Black, CabcoAZ.com. Great masonry products built here in Arizona. They do wholesale, retail, right to you, custom. Go talk to them. Wetmore, Valencia, 3 locations, Wetmore, Valencia, and then out in Sierra Vista. Phil, the coffee today for Veterans Day, a magical brew from Brute.
As usual. Thank you.
So to kick off our Veterans Day, I can't think of a better person to hang out for Veterans Day, we met her with our good friend Margo. You guys came before as you guys are doing some honor flights.
Yeah.
And her name is Colonel Maureen Gagliardi.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Great to see you today.
Good to see you. Good to see the mayor.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. I'll give you a key and a medallion in a little while, so just stand by.
That's weird that he said that.
Yes. Wow. I'll match your medallion with my medallion.
Yours is better than mine, I'm sure.
Ed, you could do the Ann Kirkpatrick thing and just walk through the studio and take a picture with a vet and then get the hell out.
Get out of here. I gotta get the prep and pastry quick. There's a long line.
Where's my letter opener? Stab, stab, stab.
She's stabbing herself. Colonel Moe, good morning.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for your service.
You're welcome.
I know if that sounds trite after a while, but
no,
it seems like
still feels good.
Okay, excellent.
Still feels good. 26 years in the military, and I've been retired for 19, and dang, I'm old.
We're in the club. Yeah.
So she's in her beautiful dress uniform today.
Yep.
And before I want to talk a little bit about the Colonel Moe story, but tell me, what's your schedule look like for your Veterans Day Monday here?
Veterans Day Monday. I got up at old dark 30, put on my beautiful dress blues, came down to KVOI, and I'm doing the show with you, and then I'm going to head over to St. Pius X. I'm going to go to Mass. And after that, I'm going over to Great Clips. I'm going to get my free coupon for a haircut.
Yeah.
Do it for Great Clips.
You look like a hippie right now, that hair so long.
No.
Right.
No. Every 4 weeks, high and tight. After that, I'm going over and giving my 3 World War II veterans their Veterans Day cards.
Awesome.
One of them is 104.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. One's 104 and the other two are 94.
And then you're over in the Fellowship Square.
And I'm at Fellowship Square at 10:30 as their guest speaker. They've invited me to lunch, and after that, I'm going to head over to Casino del Sol and see the replica of the Vietnam Wall.
That's a heck of a day.
It's all good.
When and where did you first enlist?
I enlisted in 1975, September of 75, and I raised my hand and had no idea what I was getting into.
Where was this at?
I'm enlisted in Minnesota, which is where I'm from.
What part of Minnesota are you from?
The Twin Cities.
Okay.
And then I went to basic training at Fort McClellan, Alabama.
So here you are, 1975. How old were you when you enlisted?
24.
So you were 24 years old. So talk about the path for a young lady in the 1970s after the Vietnam War was, you know, quite a PR disaster for the military. And you said, I want to stand up for my country. Well, talk about the path to get there.
Well, I wanted to do something for my country. And so I enlisted and I did my basic training. And
any family members from the military world?
My older brother.
Okay.
He was in the National Guard because he flunked the eye test for Annapolis. Then my middle brother was a CB.
You don't need to have good eyesight to drive a boat.
Back then, you couldn't wear glasses.
Oh, okay.
Back then, you couldn't wear glasses. You couldn't wear corrective lens. So he flunked the eye test. That's when we knew that he was four eyes.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So he went in the guard. He did his guard time while I was doing my army time. And that's a cute story, too.
We love cute stories. Tell us more.
So I get done with my initial enlistment, and I'm out of the military. And the next day, I raise my hand and enlist in the National Guard. And I'm thinking to myself, "What in heaven's name have I done again?"
Right.
So I lasted 6 months as the clerk at a unit in Minneapolis, and I told my commander at the time, I said, "I'd like to go to OCS, Officer Candidate School." And he goes, "Sure, Gagliardi, you can go. You're not going to make it, but you can go."
Thanks for the support, Captain.
Thank you for the support, sir. So I go to OCS. I graduate from OCS and have the commissioning ceremony. And there's my brother. And he looks at me and he goes, "Oh, crap, I got to salute my sister."
Right.
My younger sister.
Gotcha. So okay.
He was still enlisted, and I was a brand new butter bar, second lieutenant.
So what happened? So what parts of the military did you serve in, as you know, starting as a young lady and then moving forward?
Primarily, I was a platoon leader. That's your first job.
Sure.
And so I was a platoon leader at a company in Hastings, Minnesota. And then I left there. I went down to Fort Gordon, Georgia, which is my home base.
Okay.
Because I am a signal officer. So all my schooling was at Fort Gordon, Georgia.
What's a signal officer do for us tenderfoots?
Communications.
Okay.
We provide the Ma Bell for the division.
Gotcha.
That's our job.
Okay.
So first out, last in.
That's true.
They put you in that little trailer, and there you are.
That's it.
Put up an antenna and...
Yep,
they
put me in the eepy. That back then we had Jeeps.
Right. See?
Excellent.
Okay. That's before we had fancy things called trailers.
Yeah. and by the time I retired, I had my own Hummer.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Right,
living the dream. So, but you're a platoon leader, and you work with a company. And you are with your platoon sergeant, you're the driving force for those people to get the communications up for the division. Okay? After a certain amount of time, they may move you somewhere.
Right.
So they moved me to a field artillery battalion in Duluth, which was 150 miles away from the Twin Cities.
Sure.
So 1 weekend a month, I'm driving up to Duluth. Thankfully, I had four-wheel drive.
Right, that's true.
You know? So in that interim time, I'm doing my studies to keep up with all my, you know, requirements. So I'm up in Duluth. I have a wonderful time with the artillery up there. And next thing I know, they're calling me back to the Twin Cities, and they said, "We got a command for you." So then you become a company commander. So you go from second lieutenant, you go out somewhere, you become a first lieutenant. They give you a command. They give you... your captain's tracks, or first lieutenant, second award, as I call it.
Right.
So you do your captain time, your command time, and then you go away again. They send you somewhere else.
Right.
They're trying to round out your career.
Sure.
Which is really kind of neat.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then I'm with the aviation brigade. At that, you know, you put in so many years, and then I become a major.
Sure.
Okay. Then they're telling you, "Guess what? You got to go to school again." You know, back to Fort Gordon. So I go back to Fort Gordon for Command General Staff College.
Okay.
So, and then I do my time with the Aviation Brigade, and then I'm also and then I switch over. I'm the operations officer for my battalion. And then they tell me, "You're on tap for the command."
Right.
For the signal battalion. I says, "Oh, great." And they go, "But you got to go back to college." I said, "Oh, crap." So I crammed 2 years of college into 2 years.
Wow.
And that's also while working full-time at a law firm.
Look at you.
And being the S3 for the battalion.
So I want you to hold that thought. We got to go to break. 790-2040 is the phone number. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 1030 The Voice. We're hanging out with Colonel Maureen Gagliardi. And today, of course, I can't think of a better person to spend Veterans Day with. So if you have a question or comment for Maureen, 790-2040. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 1030 The Voice. See, this is Ed playing G.I. Blues for us. Thank you.
Hello.
Ed's dancing on there.
All right. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show, Veterans Day. We have Colonel Maureen Gagliardi. She's hanging out with us. We appreciate it. Good morning again, ma'am.
Thank you, Chris.
And again, we have Victor Hightower from Gospel Rescue Mission. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Sorry, I was only a captain, but...
Well, I was going to say real quick, it's Veterans Day. why are you shaking your head?
No using the word only.
Yes, true.
And no using the word just.
I'm proud of my service.
So you were a captain in the U.S. Army.
I was.
And what did you do in the Army?
I was most of the time in the 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment. We were one of the three NATO units that guarded the East-West German border.
Wow. See, it's all coming together. We just talked about the 30th anniversary of the wall coming down, and Vic was there watching patiently.
Peering through binoculars.
I love it.
And, of course, Vic does great work at the Gospel Rescue Mission. And then it all comes together because Colonel Mo, of course, you're at the Center of Opportunity doing Veterans Serving Veterans, correct?
Right. Tucson Veterans Serving Veterans.
Which I'm also involved with.
Look at this. See? It's a real kumbaya moment.
Thank
here
you for your service. And you.
So, coming up in a couple of weeks is the big Thanksgiving banquet.
Yes, we're excited. It's the first year we'll have it indoors.
Right.
The 31st annual Thanksgiving banquet is going to be inside at the H.S. Lopez Family Foundation Center of Opportunity at 4550 South Palo Verde Road.
And you guys, of course, we know that you get a lot of support for this. Usually,
yes.
You know, a lot of human support, of course. Colonel Mo said, hey, do you need help serving? And you said, we're already full up.
We're full. We could use a couple more photographers to help us capture the event, but as far as volunteers, we're full up. We will always take gift in kind, turkeys, cash is always good. Turkeys, canned vegetables, canned fruit cocktail, canned cranberry sauce, those are needed. And all the donations we get now will carry us through for the Christmas banquet, too. So
sure.
It will all get used up.
Now, Mo was asking about pies. You need pies?
Actually, the Ritz-Carlton Dove Mountain is donating all the pies and the rolls.
Wow. Oh, wow.
So we're very blessed with that.
Very
wow.
Cool.
We will not say no if you want to bring pie. You mentioned, can you do the sound effect for the ready whip?
Yeah.
You can bring that by. We'll definitely use it.
Would you rather, so if someone, you'd rather have them bring you a frozen pie, right? That you can, or not?
As long as it's ready to eat. We don't want one of those ready to bake pies because that takes a lot of work.
Gotcha.
No frozen pies.
All right. Just want to know. How long have you guys been doing this Thanksgiving dinner?
Well, this will be the 31st year of it.
Wow.
We used to be out on the street in front of the old men's center in South Tucson. We blocked the street off, put up a bunch of tables and chairs, and we'd seat 500 people at a time.
How many total did you do last year, do you think?
I didn't write it down. It was close to 2,000. Christmas was about 1,400. Thanksgiving was just over 2,000.
So talk about how important this is to the folks who come to this. I know it's Thanksgiving, but what's for you guys, why is this important?
Well, we don't want to see anybody eat their holiday meal out of a dumpster, obviously. But there are a lot of people in the neighborhood who are hurting, who don't know where their food's going to come from, who are food insecure, as they say. But it's a season of hope. It's a season of giving and sharing. And so more than just a meal, it's an opportunity to give somebody hope for the future.
Right. Now, for you, what jobs have you done at this dinner in the past?
Well, I'm the public relations person, so I kind of stand around and look important. I do a lot of TV interviews.
Okay.
I help bring the word to what we're doing.
Yeah, that's great. I love it. I just want to know if you were knee-deep in gravy yourself.
Well, Lisa Chastain, our executive director, calls me her catch-all guy. So
okay.
I do whatever needs to be done.
Very nice.
In addition to doing the interviews.
So, Mo, talk about, and both of you guys, the Veterans Serving Veterans, while I have you both here, talk about what does that program entail? What goes on with that?
Well, I just got associated with TVSV last year, and I started doing the mini stand-down this year, and that was over at the Grand Lutz, their conference center.
Explain stand-down.
Stand Down is where we reach out to the veterans. Some of the veterans are homeless. Reach out to them, get them the services that they need, like employment or legal. We feed them a nice meal. And the Stand Down that we'll be doing in the springtime, that is a three-day event where we put them in a hotel. We get them all the services that they could possibly need, but they have to want, okay?
Right.
And we try to set them up with the right people, you know, the right people for the right person, that sort of thing, you know? And it's an awesome event. We did like 300 people, I think, on our mini Stand Down in the fall.
Wow.
You know?
So what are the factors? Why are these people who have served our country... Why this homelessness? What's the disconnect here after serving your country for and then all of a sudden you're homeless? What's some of the factors leading to that? What could be done better, I guess?
Well, some of them. I mean, I haven't been in combat, but I know some of them suffer from PTSD from the stressful situations they've been in. Some of them don't want help. Some of them prefer to be on their own.
Right,
but you know, the more we can do to reach out to those that are willing, like Colonel Mo was saying, the more we can do to reach out to those people who want help, the better we'll all be.
What are the ages of these folks? What's the age range?
It's all over the place. It could be anywhere from our young soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, 19, 20-year-olds, you know.
Wow.
We see a good number of Vietnam veterans, too, but like she's saying, some people from the last two wars we've had.
OEF, OIF. The one thing that's fascinating is, I think, part of the situation or the problem is reintegration. You know, they may be an infantry person, you know, an infantryman, and what is there to do once they get out of the military?
Right.
You know, and they're caught between the proverbial rock and a hard spot. I don't know what to do. I don't know where I belong. And that is probably one of the biggest problems that I see. Once they get off active duty and they leave the service, they're caught. I'm lost. That's what it ends up being.
I think the main thing we can do, and this goes for any homeless person, is just to show them that you care. Show them that somebody's here, somebody sees you on the street, somebody smiles at you, somebody acknowledges that you exist. Just to let them know that, you know, when I'm ready for somebody to reach out to me, there is help there.
Vic, what can the Wake Up Tucson listeners do right now to help you guys at Gospel Rescue?
Go to grmtucson.com, find donate at the bottom of the page, and give us some money. Or go buy a frozen turkey and drop it off one of our locations, 707 West Miracle Mile or 4550 South Palo Verde Road.
All right. Well, Vic, thanks for everything that you guys do at Gospel Rescue.
2458. That's how many meals we served last Thanksgiving.
All right. 2458. Wow. That's amazing.
That is amazing.
Almost 2,500.
All right. They need your help. We got a Thanksgiving feast for these folks and a Christmas one. They need as much support as possible. Money, turkeys, grmtucson.com. Vic, great seeing you. Thanks for your service, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right. One more segment with Colonel Mo, and then we'll get into the, you know, the unsavory part of Tucson politics.
There you go.
Look at you, Ed Alexander. Alexander. We got the mayor of Pliskin Acres here. Thank you very much for your service, Ed, and for, you know, serving in Pliskin Acres.
That's it, yeah.
And thanks to Colonel Maureen Gagliardi. Of course, she is a retired U.S. Army, and she's in her dress blues today for Veterans Day. She has lots of things to do today.
Lots.
Let me ask you this question. Being a woman in 1975 and moving up the ranks to colonel, talk about the challenges. Was it, you know, because there's lots of people who probably will sit in there going, well, that must have been a total bear to be a woman and move up in the ranks. Explain that factor of being a woman in the military and, you know, moving, you know, through your service and earning it, getting the colonel. But talk about, were those extra challenges there that is to be expected?
They were there, but they're, you know, when you're after active duty and when you're in the guard, they weren't as prevalent as it might have been on active duty. And when I'd go to my active duty schools, I could see the pressures that they would put on the female officers. But I honest to God, I had nothing but support my whole way up.
Okay.
You know, I had a few challenges like the captain that said, yeah, you can go to OCS, but you're not going to make it. But quite honestly, I had a lot of support. And the other thing is when I became the battalion commander of my battalion, I had started there.
Right.
So I was one of their own.
Right.
And I was the first and the only female to command that battalion. And because that battalion went away in 2007 when the Army switched over to the brigade combat team concept.
Okay.
So they folded up the flag, and I was the only female to ever be the commander there.
What was the toughest part of being a commander in the U.S. Army for you? What were some of the one or two
maintaining
things?
Maintaining strength, you know.
Explain.
You had certain recruiting and retention quotas.
Right.
Okay? This is right, when I was a commander, it was right during Desert Shield, Desert Storm.
Right.
So things were getting warm.
Right.
You know, and our troops were pretty much put on the list of, you may go, you know, when this whole thing, you know, took off. But it was a 100-day conflict, and
right,
so everybody could power down. But you know, I left the military in 2001, and we know what happened then,
right?
9/11.
So when you talk about recruiting pressures, right, mm-hmm. you're just talking about the idea that you had to find new recruits or people who are already in the military to come work in your division.
You could get transfers in from other units, but
right.
the thing is a lot of times, and especially back then, when people were confronted with the idea of possibly going to war,
right,
they either stepped up or got out.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, there was a fear there.
Right.
And, you know, after 9/11, those people that entered the military had no fear.
Right, right, right. Sure.
Honest to God, I'm going to go serve my country. I'm going to go kick some butt. You know, and God love them for that, but still, once they got over there, they learned fear real fast.
So when you first got into Signal Corps to the day you retired, talk about the difference in technology from the first day in Signal Corps to retirement. What were you using in the first year, and then what were you using in your last year?
The first when I joined the Signal Corps, we would have evaluators come in, and they go, "Do you have the can and the strings?"
You know? The soup cans.
And I'd sit there and I go, "No, but we have state of the museum, multi-channel,
good line,
multi-channel rigs, and we have AM." Parabolic AM, and that's state of the museum also.
Yeah. I used to make fun of Ed's old equipment when we had this. We used to call it East German equipment.
Yeah.
All right. The idea, state of the museum is...
That's great. I never heard that. That's wonderful.
You like that, huh?
Big knobs, big meter.
Yeah. All right. Our multi-channel rigs ran on tubes.
Yeah.
You know? It's like somebody said, bring in an old TV. We'll get a tube from there, you know? But then... in about the mid-90s, we switched over to what they call mobile subscriber equipment, which was state-of-the-art at the time. And by the time I got out, they were switching over to microwave.
Right.
Sonar.
Sure.
So, I mean, and basically, the battalion that I commanded was 600 people. By the time they went to the microwave equipment, there was no longer a need for a battalion. They could run that with, a platoon-sized element, if even that.
Wow.
You know, so there was no need for 600-person battalion. They could, and that's why the brigade combat team came into play.
So tell me this. So Ed brought up the trailer, right? And you said it was a... So explain your first year. What is it, if you're going to be in the field, right, and you're going to set... What's the setup look like when you first started, and then tell me what the setup would look like in the same kind of situation the day you left.
it was great when we would go out to the field, because we would be the first ones out. We'd head out to the field with our equipment, and there would be a captain or a major that would come over, and they would say, "Can you do something about those machines that are making all that noise?" And I said, "You mean the generators?" He goes, "Yeah, can you dig them in?" And I says, "I'll call the engineers and ask them." I get on the horn to the engineers, and I'd say, "I need to have my generators dug in." And the guy on the radio would say, "You and what else?" "You and who else?" So Our equipment was really, I mean, we had a lot of equipment to be able to, for the generals to talk during exercises. By the time the equipment changed over from mobile subscriber equipment to the sonar, to the radar, it was probably scaled down 75%.
Wow.
You know, 75%, probably even maybe 80%. And you would send out a team to go set up the microwave antenna. That takes 10 minutes.
Right.
Okay? Because they're just shooting up to the ionosphere and back. And then they have their mobile telephones, and that commander was talking in 15, 20 minutes all around his whole battlefield.
We're talking to Colonel Marine Gagliardi here on 1030 Voice, local news and talk. We got a phone call that someone wants to say hi to you, but I was watching that movie American Sniper. Did you see American Sniper?
Right.
So the idea that he would call up his wife on a cell phone.
Sat phone.
On the sat phone in the middle of basically a firefight.
Right.
Is that real? The idea that you could actually, let him do that?
Well,
I felt like it was way too Hollywood that all of a sudden, he kills like four guys and he's like, got the phone up. Hey, baby, how's the kids doing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I love the movie, idea of it.
Sat phones are real.
I know they're real. The idea that he was using them in between shooting people.
Well,
I just
it
felt
was
like,
Chris.
Thank you.
What can I say?
790-2040 is the phone number. Are you okay with A-10 pilots?
Oh, love A-10 pilots.
All right. Umpire John, welcome to Veterans Day, and thank you for your service, sir.
Yes. Hey, Colonel Moe. How you doing, ma'am?
I'm doing good, and thank you for your service.
I'd do it again, but I have to be young like you.
Young like me? Do you know how old I am, John?
I came out of high school in 73 and was commissioned in 77. So we're about the same age.
No.
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 Anyway.
No.
Anyway, when my wife was commissioned an ensign, a very senior Navy female captain brought all the junior officers in and said, hey, look at me. I'm single. I go home to my cats, but I'm a Navy captain, which is for Chris, a colonel equivalent.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. And or you can get out and do the you'll get married and have a family. Either track is good. Is that still the case today for the young lieutenants and ensigns or even enlisted coming in?
Well, I'm 19 years retired. So, and I'm 69 years old as of the week before this one.
Uh-huh.
And I
didn't know if you had any ties into the youngsters there anymore.
I don't. My division is up in the Twin Cities.
Yes, ma'am.
I go back once a year.
Mm-hmm.
During the summer. I'm not stupid enough to go back during the winter. So I don't like snow. I don't drive in it well anymore. Kids nowadays are kind of resilient. They're really, they're a lot more resilient than I think I was back then.
Okay.
Well, John, thanks for the call, man. I got to get rocking. Happy Veterans Day.
Happy Veterans Day, John.
Bye-bye.
790-2040. Let's go to Cowboy Dave on line 3. Cowboy Dave, you're on with Colonel Moe. What's up?
Hey, Colonel Moe, you were talking, you were from Minute Oh So Cold. And I said, I trained with some National Guard guys from, Minnesota. They were down at Fort Polk, JRTC. And I was, TDY from Hawaii. I was, E7 active duty. And we were down there as advisors. And then some of the things you were saying, I said, man, I'm having flashbacks, Colonel. You're talking about generators. I said, I was a paratrooper, so everything was on the back in your rucksacks. You know, we had a saying, pack light, freeze at night, in the military. And then you had this guy, Vic, on the captain, and he was in Florida Gap. And I said, man, I was over there as a young platoon sergeant with the 1st Armored Division in Bamberg. And so we had 2-2 cabs right down the street from us. And they were at Camp Hoff there on the border, East German-Czech border. And you got to remember, Chris, I mean, this is during Reagan's tenure. And there were three training areas in Germany, Grafenwehr, Hohenzollern, and Waldflicken. And being a paratrooper going over to Europe in our armor, and I was like a fish out of water. I was like, I didn't know what the heck an armor vehicle was. You know, we were paratroopers, but, you know, that was the thing back then. They would take paratroopers and they would cross train them, you know, send them over to army units for a couple of years. And then I went, thank God I went back to an airborne unit. But God bless you, ma'am, and for all your service. Hey, I got a question for you. Have you seen those new Class A's that the Army came up with?
Afraid so.
These are the Sergeant Major of the Army last year in the Army Navy game. They're the old World War II.
Yeah, they're the pinks and greens.
Yeah, yeah. It says, man, those things look good. You know the old saying, standing tall and looking good out of being Hollywood. And those Class A's are looking good there, ma'am. I hope you're wearing some or you will get a pair.
I'm in my dress blues. I don't care for them, but everybody's entitled to their own opinion.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I'm old school. You know, and those old brown jump boots, you know, and the garrison cap, you know, being a paratrooper. Did you ever get a chance to go to Fort Benning, the airborne school?
I did. I did go to Fort Benning. I did not jump out of a perfectly good airplane, though.
Still have all her marbles. See that?
I'm trying to get Chris and Ed. There's this World War II airborne demonstration team out of Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to get Chris and Ed and get a couple of listeners, Margot, and go to Fredericksburg, Oklahoma, and go through the 10-day civilian jump course. And that would be awesome.
We want to give something in exchange. We would have those guys come in and do urban survival with Ed in Pliskin Acres.
In June.
Hey, Dave, thank you for your service. I got to get rocking, man.
Thank you, sir.
Great call as always.
Thank you, Cowboy Dave.
790-2040 is the phone number on 1030 The Voice. We're hanging out with Colonel Mo on Veterans Day. Yes, Edward, I can see you're leaning. I've known you long enough. I can see the lean.
I'm going to do something here when you're done. So let me know when you're done. So
okay. I will do that. I asked you the toughest part. What's some of the toughest part of being a commander? What is the moment for you as a commander of other human beings in the U.S. Army? What was the moment that you say, damn it, I love this job. This is why I'm here.
Oh, there were too many.
Give me a smattering.
You know, one of the things that was really kind of cute is when I got promoted and became the battalion commander of my unit. The troops or the officers brought this box up on the stage, and they opened the box, and inside the box was a beautiful golf bag, totally embroidered with my name and my rank and the 134 Signal Battalion on there. And the guy that was promoting me was one of my friends, and he says, is that within the $200 gift limit, Colonel?
Nice.
And I just sat there and I says, oh my God, I don't know, you know?
What's the most emotional moment you had as a commander?
Burying a soldier. Yeah. Yeah. Had one die on the way back from drill one weekend, and she fell asleep at the wheel.
Oh.
Yeah. And she was the niece of one of my captains. That was tough.
I bet.
That was tough.
Right now, here you are, you're retired Army, you're working with homeless veterans, you see what's going on. What is something if you had your magic wand moment right now in relation to how the U.S. military treats its veterans or this type of thing, what would be that list of things you'd like, can you please fix this to make veterans' lives better? What would be on that short list?
Short list would be making it easier for them to get the services that they need. Don't make them jump through hoops to get what they need. And part of the problem is I think when they exit the service, their exit interview doesn't really cover enough of the items that they need to know so that they can navigate through the VA system and, you know, finding a job. Where do they go and how do they get there? Because I think they're just confused or disoriented.
Sure.
And they need all the help they can get. And I don't mean hand-holding them. I just mean directing them, helping them find direction.
Because that's what it feels like, right? They feel like, you feel like the government just kind of dumps, after they're done, they just dump them out into society. And
I do. And my vet group that I am most passionate about, I love the World War II veterans and I love the Korean War veterans. I serve as a secretary treasurer to one of the chapters
right.
on the Korean War vets. But my group that I have, you know, that gets me right in the gut is the Vietnam vet. They were treated so poorly
right.
when they came back. And I don't think we could ever forgive ourselves enough because we treated them poorly.
Yep.
And I remember that. I was in the military.
Sure.
And I said, oh, my God, that's got to be tough.
Yep.
So we need to really focus our efforts on what's important.
Sure.
And get rid of the minutiae.
The government, we do minutia well.
Oh, we do. We shovel it.
Ed Alexander, before we let Mo go, what do you got for me?
A couple of things. First of all, thank you for the medallion from the 134th. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
And there's this other guy from Minnesota I just ran into lately. I didn't personally run into him yet, but if you guys watched the game last night, the guy with the dreadlocks, big tall kid who's pretty darn good, Zeke. Right. Zeke Minaj. Zeke Nagy is from Minnesota. He's a freshman, power forward, 6'11". And on the red and blue game, which I was not at,
right,
to open the red and blue game at McHale, he played the national anthem. So from one Minnesotan to another, I'd like to play this for you. And if you haven't heard this before, it's pretty darn.
We're going to bump out with this.
Yes.
So, Colonel Mo, thanks for everything. Thanks for your
Thank
service.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
God bless. Salute.
Love getting to know you over the years.
Yes.
You bet. Love getting to know you guys.
All right. Have a great Veterans Day.
Thank you. You.
All right, Ed. Play it out for us. Let's go. Love Colonel Mo, man. You
Sweet.
Can't get pumped about America after
God
listening
bless.
To Colonel Mo. You have no feelings.
Mm.
So real quick, this is going to be perfect for this quick segment before we get to third hour. Got a couple of things we need to cover first segment. Tim from Desert Rose has your Get Yourself Ready for Tax Season list, so we're ready to do that and talk about it. He's a veteran himself. So I talked about when I went last Thursday to the World War II luncheon put on by World War II veteran Carl Haupt. Dreamy Dan Marries was our MC, and Bud Foster was there. He did a nice job on some stories, hanging out with Hig Dog and Mrs. D and Margot and Kathy from Honor Flight. I saw Ann Kirkpatrick walk in, and she went right in one door and out the other. Billy Kovacs was running around with his giant camera taking pictures, right? She did not sit down. She just went right out the door, right? So I went to
photo op.
I went to the Twitter page. And there's a picture of her shaking a veteran's hand, right? And it says, with over 125 World War II veterans in attendance, the Honor Flight Luncheon was one to remember.
How would she know?
You weren't even there. Well, you were there, but you left after 3 minutes. So I knew we were going to get some payoff, Ed, on the Twitter on the Twitter page. When I saw that
photo op,
I just had to give Anchor Patrick a... All right, top of the hour news, CBS, coming up. And then we're going to get you ready for tax season. And there's, I'll put a little bit of a, we opened up a Sabino Canyon shuttle. We'll talk about that a little bit.